Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I am your host, Nicholas Larimer, and for those of you watching on YouTube, I have just discovered the Zoom button on my camera. Today I am joined by Mr. Marius Ritt. Marius, how are you doing?
That's right, and you, Nick?
You know, Marius, I know you're lying because of the subject matter today, close to your heart, and that is, of course, cricket. And we will get into that in about a moment. I've never seen Marius so disturbed by goings on in the country. You know, we talk on the show often about the sort of total collapse of the democratic constitutional edifice almost on a daily basis. Marius, he sails through it all, but when it comes to
with cricket, equanimity and poise.
Yes, but when it comes to cricket, Marius's his passions are aroused. We, of course, also have Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you?
Well, thank you, Nick. Excited.
I see someone in the comments says that I spooked them with my Zoom, so I promise I won't do it again without warning. All right. Today's episode, I am fueling myself with Recoffee Without Milk and Sugar, and it is indeed a bit of a bitter topic today, but we must talk about it, and that is, of course, Cricket South Africa, which has been a much troubled organization for a while. Now they've done something else that I think we all agree here is quite silly. Cricket SA has directed their men's team to collectively take the knee to prevent an unintended perception of disparity. The board of Cricket SA has recognize concerns that different postures taken by team members in support of the Black Lives Matter initiative created an unintended perception of disparity or lack of support for the initiative. And they feel that it is, quote, imperative for the team to be taking a united and consistent stand against racism, especially given South Africa's history. So up until now, before cricket games, players in the cricket team have been able to either take a knee to show their support for Black Lives Matter, the movement, or not. It was left up to them rather than being enforced.
Or raise a fist,
right? These were their options. Players did their own thing, and so different players did different things. And as our colleague Alex Weiss, who is one of the producer of the show, has pointed out, this was agreed upon at a discussion amongst the team very recently, but it seems the board has gone back on this. Gabriel, why is this such a problem? It's just telling people to kneel. What's the issue?
Right. So I think that to take that question a step further, people say people are kneeling in order to fight racism, and that's clearly a good thing. So why would you want to get in the way of that? The first question you should ask yourself is, who started kneeling? Who birthed this idea of kneeling for Black Lives Matter? Colin Kaepernick is the answer. He was a sort of B-string working his way up, American football player who decided to take a knee. This was in connection to the Brown shooting. Famously, hands up, don't shoot was the line spread sort of through gossip and on media as to what happened there. Michael Brown was innocently unarmed, saying, "Hey, my hands are up, don't shoot me." And then the cops viciously killed him. A subsequent investigation directed under Obama's administration found that that's not at all what happened. Forensic evidence showed that's not what happened. Eyewitness testimony showed that's not what happened. So Kaepernick kind of started the thing over a protest against a race-based murder, which was not a race-based murder. In fact, it was self-defense. Michael Brown had repeatedly tried to attack the cops violently and with potentially lethal force. Okay, that's one thing to know about Colin Kaepernick, is that he started on the wrong foot when he kneeled. The other thing to know about him is that he basically endorsed violence during the 2020 BLM riots. He said that, tears will come and people will plead for peace when justice is raining down on the terrible white supremacists, but those cries for pain should be ignored. And in the BLM Because Black Lives Matter report that we wrote last year, we drew attention to several black people, both police officers and civilians, who were killed during the Black Lives Matter protests, whose cries for peace fell, at least in Kaepernick's case, on deaf ears. So the kneeling thing starts in just about the worst place. The BLM Global Foundation, Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi and company have made, at this stage, billions of rands through the BLM Global Foundation. They've got chapters across America, but also around the world. They've got affiliates in South Africa. This is a money-making scheme. And okay, that's fine. You're making money to raise awareness against race and injustice. They're not interested in the facts. Roland Collier, black, youngest ever Harvard professor and MacArthur Genius Grant recipient, found by digging into the data, no evidence that the police were disproportionately shooting black people. In fact, if you broke it down, if anything, they were more likely to shoot a white guy. That's not to say he didn't find other problematic things, but when it comes to white police shooting black people or police in general shooting black people in America, BLM's basic charge was debunked by the evidence. But much more than that, much more than them making money, much more than them in particular instances making up false narratives, much more than them ignoring basic data. The real threat here is that they take people up on the good idea that you should oppose racial discrimination. We really should oppose racial discrimination. They hook you in with that line, and then they take you down a path to genuine textbook Marxist ideology. The BLM Foundation leaders have described themselves as trained Marxists. They've described themselves as implementing that training. If you look at their keystone documents, you find the call for abolishing the police, turning society, turning the private property that police guard into public property, turning the state's function into one of complete intervention and maternalistic care that leaves you with no choice about what you're in your best interests because the powers that be will decide. This is really not an exaggeration. We released a very serious, like 30-page document because Black Lives Matter report last year. We are welcoming people to read that. What we have done, I'll finish with this, Nicholas, I know I'm going a bit long here, is we have written a letter to Cricket South Africa, to their chairman, Lawson Naidu. And we've said, look, it seems to us the best interpretation is that you're naive, that you don't realize what the BLM initiative is, what the movement is doing, who its leaders are, and why it is that good faith South Africans don't want their actions to be confused with endorsing that. For sure, some people can kneel and say, no, I'm not doing it for that. I've got my own story. But it's hard not to be confused with endorsing this terrible project. And so some people have are going to reasonably decide not to. On top of that, there's freedom of speech issues. On top of that, there's freedom of religion issues. We think this is a counterproductive way. Cricket SA says repeatedly that it's one of the most racist institutions in the country. Let's take that at face value and get in there, teach them about BLM, teach them about how racism can lead to worse outcomes if you tackle it in the wrong way, and teach them how to actually live by the values of merit, human decency, judging one another by the content of the character, and espousing full non-racialism. We want to help, and we want your help. Our website has just gone live. Stand up for cricket, South Africa. You'll see that on the IRR homepage. And if you want us to speak to Cricket South Africa, if you want them to reverse their decision, to order their players to take a knee and thereby add credence to Kaepernick and company. If you don't want any of that, go and sign up, put your name there, and it just adds weight to our appeal, which is basically grounded in research, but is hugely sensitive to the interests of ordinary South Africans in getting past this race-basing nonsense.
Maurice, seemed like we had a compromise that worked for what has been a very contentious political issue. Why has Cricket SA gone back on it?
Yeah, I think the compromise did work. And this is something that should have either, when this first became an issue about whether to kneel or not kneel, I think the team should have been united from the beginning. And they should have done some kind of gesture, whether they do decide all as a team to kneel or to, you know, raise their fists or whatever the case is. But they didn't do that, and we've reached this point now. And I'm not too sure that, I mean, I would be very surprised if most cricket fans are, you know, up in arms because some players decided to take a knee and others didn't. I think was, as usual, these kind of things, was probably a handful of accounts on Twitter who said, you know, this is very bad and how can this happen? And like Cricket South Africa's had a knee-jerk reaction to it. And, you know, the thing is, people say we must keep politics out of sports, but maybe that is, you know, like in a perfect world, you can. Politics will never be able to stay out of sport. But I don't think Quinton de Kock should be punished for not wanting to take any. Freedom of speech is also not having to say certain things if you don't want to. And we don't know why Quinton de Kock didn't want to take any. You know, we cannot see it. We cannot read the contents of his mind. We do not know what his reason is to not take any. And he must be able to, you know, he should not be punished for not wanting to do this. And this is, he's been forced to make a political statement. And this is not, and, you know, how do you say it, that he has been forced by his employer to make a political statement. And he, whatever you think about Black Lives Matter, whether you think it is, say, a Marxist, you know, kind of a Trojan horse, or if you just think it's an organization who's pushing a very good, you know, movement, which is Black Lives Matter, obviously nobody can argue with that. But I think it's what's happened with Cricket South Africa is really beyond the pale. Each player should be able to make the decision. And Quinton de Kock, we cannot say why he wants to, why he didn't want to. You know, you can't say without any doubt at all that Quinton de Kock is a racist. We don't know why he's done this. And I think it's knee-jerk. And but this goes back, Cricket South Africa has been very confused for a long time now, and I think this is part of it. And also this directive was made this morning, about an hour or half an hour before the match started. And Quinton de Kock pulled out of the match, you know, about half an hour before it started, you know, citing personal reasons. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is the end of Quinton de Kock's international cricket career. I just saw now, I haven't had time to read the article yet, but Cricket South Africa has come out and said they note Quinton de Kock's refusal to take any, and they are deciding on the next steps. And it really upsets me that somebody now, because they do not want to take a certain political statement, make a certain political statement, now I might lose their career. And whatever, as I say, whatever you think about BLM, if you think it's a Marxist Trojan horse, or if you think it's a great movement that everybody should support, each player and each person should be able to make that choice for themselves, and they should not be punished. Not taking the knee does not make you racist, and by the same token, taking the knee does not mean you support Marxist terrorists either.
Yeah, I mean, it is very troubling, the idea that people that this movement is so casually conflated with being against racism. If you're not for Black Lives Matter, you must be for racism. And that is, I think, the root of the toxicity in so much of the way that this is being described in the media. I must say, making people on threat of losing their jobs swear allegiance to a political movement sends lots of shivers up my spine.
There's also lots of hypocrisy around this. Moeen Ali, he's plays cricket for England. He got into trouble a little while ago for wearing two wristbands, one that said, I think, Free Gaza and Save Palestine, or other way around, Free Palestine, Save Gaza. Whatever you think about the issues in Palestine, that is also a political statement, but Moeen Ali got in trouble for that. And why is he not allowed to make statements about the people of Palestine, but you can't support Black Lives Matter? Same with Mesut Ozil, who I think he plays for Arsenal. He's a German footballer of Turkish origin. When the English Premier League, everybody was taking the knee and, you know, like, was a big thing. Mesut Ozil got into trouble from his football team for speaking out about what's happening against the Uyghur people in China. And Arsenal distanced themselves from that statement. So it's all a bunch of hypocrisy and a bunch of nonsense. And, you know, as I said, you cannot actually keep the politics out of sport. And I think it's fine. You know, sportsmen often make political gestures, and there's lots of history in that in South Africa too, which I don't think is a problem, but there needs to be, either you can make a political gesture or you can't. And, you know, taking the knee is making a political gesture, and that's fine, but then you should be able to speak out against what's happened to the Uyghur people or what's happened to Palestinians, or, you know, I mean, an interesting thought experiment, what would happen if one of the Afrikaner players decided to wear a shirt saying stop farm murders or something? I'm sure we'd see an outcry and get told he's a racist for saying farm murders are a bad thing. And I think we could all know, there'd be people on Twitter would probably lose their minds for something like that. So, but yeah, either you allow any kind of political statement, you allow none.
If I can just say a quick, just a final thought on what it means to take the knee. Morris is absolutely right. Not everyone who takes the knee endorses the full BLM program. And thank heavens for that. If everyone who ever took a knee endorsed that, we really and truly would have lost the battle of ideas. One way to think about this, so, you know, semantically, when you say something, there's what you intended and then there's how it's perceived. And there's always going to be some room for distance between those two. Since it's election week, you might as well think of it like a vote. We have found in our polling that 98% roughly of EFF people would not like expropriation without compensation to apply to themselves. But if you all for nationalization of land to apply to their own property, okay? But the thing is, if you nationalize all land, then it is going to apply to your own property. So it's like, be careful what you vote for, because your intentions might be very sweet, but you don't actually have control. Once you have kneeled in the same fashion as Colin Kaepernick and the ordinances of the BLM Global Foundation, you have, in a sense, given them your vote. So I encourage people to learn about what that means, to learn about those implications, and to tell people who are doing it naively and in good faith why they should think again. And then they should make their own choice, as Mario says.
Well said. All right. Let us move on to our next story today. Go check out, I posted in the live comments here, those watching after the show, you'll see it on the side there. The links to the things we talked about are both our report Because Black Lives Matter, as well as the link to our campaign. I think it's also on the Facebook feed if you're watching on Facebook. And for everyone else who's just listening on audio, check it out on our irr.org.za website.
Anybody who is watching live, also just let you know, South Africa is 1-for-9 chasing 143 against the West Indies. So
that's very good. I mean, we've done so badly before. I think I've got to just say one last thing, which is like, don't you sometimes get the feeling that this kind of stuff gets worse when the team's not doing super well?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Like when the rugby team was doing the best, Khaleesi was like, dude, you guys can fire me. It doesn't matter what color of skin I am. Like, let's just play to win. Like, success builds success. And when you're being a bit of a loser, then you start looking for all the other.
Yeah, everyone falls into infighting and chaos, and then everything breaks down. I agree with that completely. All right, I'm going to be very annoying.
Let's win for the country.
Yeah, let's win. I'm going to be a very annoying YouTuber podcaster right now, asking you to please subscribe and like this content. If you're listening to us on an audio platform, please review us with a 5-star review and share this with your friends and family. Be like a zealot preaching in the street and say, the Daily Fringe Show knows the truth. Or at least it's good fun to watch.
Dude, I had that on Friday. We went for dinner in Park View, and someone came up to our dinner table. I was there with John Endres, our boss, and someone came up and said, are you Gabriel Krauser? And I said, yes. What? And he's like, yeah, from the Daily Fringe Show. You guys tell the truth.
Hell yeah. All right. Let us move on to our next story. And that is, once again, there is trouble on the N3 highway, the great artery that links Johannesburg to our main port in Durban. Truck drivers were at least this morning, I'm not sure if they're still there, were obstructing the N3 toll route in both directions near Montreux. Police were deployed to try and control the situation. There was a big backlog of traffic that developed between Montreux and Harry Smith, and was causing big delays around the Tugela Plaza. There were also trucker protests in the Eastern Cape, with trucks blocking a route to the PE port. Apparently, some of these truckers handed a list of demands and grievances to the Transport Minister, Fikile Mbalula, which said that they wanted a number of things fixed. One of them was, quote, the dominance of foreign nationals. Gabriel, what do you make of this? It seems, once again, like this is a recurring issue. We've seen that some of the attacks against drivers on the N3 in the past have been directed against, quote-unquote, foreign nationals.
Yeah, you know, I studied a little bit of political science, and at least since Machiavelli, but really going back quite a lot further, Ibn Sina in the Islamic tradition has a little bit of this. One of the great insights has been, for the prince, for the Tsar, for the king, for the chief, if you really want to stay in charge, you've got to know people are going to get upset. And especially if you're not very good at being in charge, people are going to get very upset. And one of the magic tricks you have to pull is that when they get upset, they direct their anger in a counterproductive way that takes away the moral higher ground from them, and that actually draws your grip over power tighter. So I think this is, I think Machiavelli would call this A plus success for the National Democratic Revolution. The ruling alliance, the ANC and company, have presided over an economy that's had no growth. We've had huge job slashing in the last couple of years, but before that, jobs were growing slower than the population. This has been a result partly of corruption, which most media houses like to obsess about, but partly because of policies, bad laws, chasing away investment, hostile to the idea of adding value. Okay, so you've got a lot of truck drivers who do very hard work, who are in a very tough situation where they're not actually getting where they want to go. Opportunities are being restricted. They're very frustrated. You try and save some money, it gets stolen. Your family gets victimized by crime. You try and go buy something in July and you can't even do it because everything's been looted. You know, life is really difficult. What should you do? Well, it's a local government election week. So one thing you could do is vote in a better administration. And generally what you could do is apply pressure against the force that's really ruining your life. That's not what's happening. And yes, I think partly that's to blame on those truck drivers, but partly that's to blame on the sort of gatekeepers of information who break down the connection between cause and effect so readily, who do so much like racial distraction, so much talking up a kind of South African black nationalism where it's like, we are the exclusive victims of all things terrible in the world, and therefore we deserve a free lunch, and damn whitey, damn racist Indian serial killers, and damn foreigners have come here to take our jobs. This sort of political rhetoric is it's gross wherever you see it, and I think people find it easy to call it out when they see it in other countries, but it's really destructive in a country whose fundamentals are as weak as ours because it means lashing out in this way. So I think the final thought is, you're a truck driver who's pulling your huge machine orthogonal to the highway so that no traffic can go up and down for as long as you can. What's that doing to the bottom line of the business you're working at? And how often do you think between that and the Command Council's strange regulations and the general business hostility and repeats of riots and how long do you think you can keep doing that while keeping your job? It's people are kind of shooting themselves in their own foot.
Morris, your thoughts?
I think you can just draw it down to basic economics. If South Africa had been growing at 5% a year on average in the past 15 years, I think one of the problems we see at the moment we wouldn't have. And I mean, maybe it's quite a banal point, but I mean, I don't think we'd have seen what happened in July. We wouldn't see this kind of thing. We wouldn't see this kind of Cape independence movement, you know, becoming more and more prominent. You know, it all comes down to economics. And, you know, there doesn't seem to be any kind of political will to reform. I mean, there's people pay lip service to it. But, I mean, it's a fact and people don't like to hear it often. But, you know, lots of really growth-destroying policies have become more to the forces for Cyril Ramaphosa became president. I mean, things like expropriation without compensation, you know, great enforcement of BEE. I mean, there's been one or two things kind of, you know, green shoots, like the 100 megawatts issue of allowing companies to produce their own electricity. But these are pretty much...
And SAA. Look, SAA is flying
again. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nice. But it's all... it's all to be... It's, you know, it's... Seems to be, I don't think it's too little, you know, I think. So, but yeah, I mean, what it comes down to, you wouldn't see this kind of unrest in whatever you, because people just don't, I mean, if the economy, as I say, was growing at 5%, and we've seen every year people were, felt they were getting richer, we wouldn't have these kinds of issues. But, you know, I don't think the government has the will to do it. And I think as long as the ANC is in charge, we'll carry on seeing, you know, this kind of tepid growth rate, 1% a year, if we're lucky, 2% in a really good year. Most of the time, we're probably going to be growing at 0%, if not negative economic growth.
Can I just put in my favorite foreigner anecdotes from KZN, which is that I was at Hilton College speaking to some staff there, and they were discussing an earlier dispute where the sort of road into and out of Hilton had been blockaded by some of the staff, actually ex-staff. Anyway, there were some complaints about who gets to I said, what was the complaint? They said, no, they were complaining. I was speaking, by the way, to the lady staff, and they said, we weren't very interested in this. This was the men staff. I said, what are the men staff complaining about? They said, the men staff are very worried about Hilton employing foreigners. And I said, foreigners, like from Lesotho or something? Because in that part of KZN, that's the big worry, is the Lesothos. I said, no, even worse, from Pietermaritzburg.
Yes, I think that's a really good point, because it proves that a foreigner is a term used very often, which I think actually, when you drill down into the actual issues, doesn't mean quite what we might think it means.
Well, I remember when we've had xenophobic riots before, Tsongas, even though they're South African citizens or born in South Africa, they were actually also attacked, you know, even though they could speak, you know, Zulu or Sotho, whatever the case is, but because you're Tsonga, even though you're South African citizen, born in South Africa, exactly, you're seen as a foreigner. So it's all very complex. I mean, just because you've got a little green South African ID book doesn't mean you're not a foreigner.
Indeed. All right, and with that, let us move on to our final story for today, which is quite an interesting, or at least I thought quite an interesting last-minute political promise from the DA in Johannesburg. The DA says that if they win in Johannesburg, that SANRAL and the e-toll gantries will be cut off from receiving electricity from the city of Johannesburg, as they have not paid their bills. In other words, they say that if they are the governing party of Johannesburg, they will stop e-tolls by cutting off the electricity. I must say, it's not an idea I thought of. I think it's quite cunning. As in terms of a sort of political campaign, in terms of a ethical campaign, all these things, Maurice, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think it's very good. And I think it's quite a clever move by the DA. I saw somebody was tweeting Darby Schultz, who's an election analyst, and he was saying, just on the electricity issue, he was saying he's worked in elections before, and he said the thing that damages the ANC's polling the most is when there's load shedding. So you're saying if in a week before there's an election that there's load shedding, that means there's big trouble. But yeah, I think this is a great move by the DA, and maybe it'll be the electricity then to actually, you know, power people's homes instead of powering the various e-toll gantries. So I think it's a great move by the DA. let's see what happens on Monday.
Yeah, I have a feeling that the e-toll gantries probably don't use that much power. Gabriel, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a gimmick. And I think as far as gimmicks go, it's just about the best one I've seen out there. I see the comment, can they cut the power to Lutuli House? I'm not sure that would make much of a difference.
Well, this is the interesting thing here. So when I first heard about this idea, I thought, man, is this, you know, they've signed this is like a contractual agreement between SANRAL and them to provide power. I mean, would this be legal? But if SANRAL hasn't paid their bills, which seems to be what the DA is alleging here for electricity, then they could. So
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe they should look into whether Lutuli House has been paying its electricity bills.
Yeah.
Well, they don't pay tax or PAYE, so...
This is exactly right. They've got all these outstanding debts. Be no surprise if they've got outstanding municipal debts. I think the basic point here is that the DA's value add proposition is concrete. It's tangible. It kind of makes sense. You can kind of localize it. I think the greatest contrast was the DA has tried to reduce load shedding in Cape Town by really building capacity, and it's worked. They have had less load shedding. Michael Morris is telling us he's had no load shedding in 2 years. It's ridiculous. Whereas the ANC's policy was to cancel load shedding. Well, like phoning Eskom and saying no load shedding, and then guess what? We got load shed.
Yeah,
I think that's a very good example of reality meeting ideology.
It was so great. Like, here's our strategy, guys. How are we going to make your life better? We're going to cancel it. Like they cancelled Gareth Cliff. We're just going to cancel it. But it turns out you can't cancel either.
Yes, very much so. Anyway, thank you very much for watching. We hope you enjoyed the show today. Please check out that campaign, which is in the live comments of the show on YouTube or on our website. If you click on the campaigns button, you should be able to find it there. IRR.org.za. Also, please sign up to become a friend of the Institute to support us in our campaigns, in our analysis, in our vast media empire known as the Daily Friend. You can do that by SMS your name to 32823, which is always on the banner behind me if you're watching on YouTube. Anyway, thank you very much. And we shall see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.